Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast and our Scares and Dares episode, where we review our favorite horror movie scare of the week and give you the NFL player prop bets we dare to make. My name is Hakun Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time, and with me, as always, for our Scares and Dares episode, senior staff writer, Joanne
Kong. Hey, everyone.
How you doing, Joanne?
Good.
All right, we got plenty to talk about this week, so let's get it rolling. We're going to give you our Scare of the Week, which is Terrifier 2 from 2022, and then we're going to give you our player prop bets that we dare to make. Let's go. So let's start with our Scare of the Week this week, and that is the 2022 movie Terrifier 2, streaming on Amazon Prime. You'll find this movie at a not-so-brisk 2 hours and 18 minutes. Yeesh. And it's interesting because it was actually released wide by theaters in October 2022, re-released recently on November 8th of 2023. Written and directed by Damian Leone, produced by Steven Della Sella, Phil Falcone, Jason Levy, and Michael Levy. So this stars Lauren Lavera as Sienna Shaw, and David Howard Thornton returns as Art the Clown. And last week, we talked about the first movie in the series and a little bit about All Hallows Eve, which is the anthology film where Art the Clown comes from. But now we're going to talk about Terrifier 2. So we take it on to the next step here, and it essentially picks up right after the original Terrifier in many ways. Of course, there's two different timelines there. Spoiler alert if you didn't listen to our first podcast on Terrifier. But either way, let's give you a little bit of background on the movie itself, and then let's dive right into it. Okay, so after being resurrected following the Miles County Massacre, Art the Clown brutally murders the coroner investigating his body with a hammer. He goes on to the laundromat to clean his clothes, where he encounters the little pale girl, the mysterious girl in similar clown attire. A year later, teenager Sienna Shaw is finishing up on her Halloween costume, which happens to be an angel warrior that's based on a sketch made by her dad, who recently died of a brain tumor. Sienna's younger brother, Jonathan, wants to dress as Art the Clown for Halloween and has become fixated with him since discovering sketches of him and his victims from the Miles County Massacre in their dad's sketchbook. So that night, Sienna has a nightmare where she encounters Art and awakens to a fire on her dresser, which destroys the wings that were needed for her costume, while the sword that was gifted to her from her father remains unscathed. Mysteriously, Art appears in the periphery around both Sienna and Jonathan throughout that day, leading up to a more direct terrorizing of them by going after their friends and then them both personally on Halloween night. So I'll stop there because I don't want to give away too much about the film, but that's essentially the setup, and it kind of goes on from there. So let's, what do you think, Joanne? Tell us what you thought about the film.
So I think if you see Terrifier and Terrifier 2, you have to understand that there is two timelines. I think that's where we got a little confused when we saw Terrifier and Terrifier 2, because we were like, didn't really understand that there were two separate timelines. Because when you see the first one, it kind of almost runs,
It's like a loop.
It's like with the second one.
Right.
So if you haven't seen it, spoiler, but there is an interview with the sole survivor in the first episode.
Right.
I mean, the first movie, I say episode, but the first movie. And then when you see Terrifier 2, you see the same interview.
Right.
Happening. So it's almost running like, you know, loop or like parallel to both things.
Right. So Victoria Hayes is a survivor from the first movie, but they start with the interview and then they show you what happened leading up to the interview, which isn't revealed until the end of the movie.
Right. You don't realize that that the interview
happened 1 year after the event of Terrifier. So
right. But yeah, so the Terrifier 2 picks up supposedly right after he gets resurrected at the coroner's
office.
I don't want to call it an office because it's the morgue.
Yeah, the morgue. There you go. Let's just call it what it is.
But it was I think we were talking about this because you said that you and reviewers said there was more of a story, where you said Terrifier, the original, had no story.
Well, it had very limited story.
Right? And I said to you, well, you could kind of say no story is a story because it rolls into two, which you say created this huge backlog of what ifs.
No, I mean, it's not necessarily a what ifs thing. It's more as they're hinting at a wider universe of information that you're starting to see some character development. Because one of my problems, if you remember from last episode, then we talked about Terrifier.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the last episode of our podcast,
yes.
Where we talked about the last movie,
yes.
Is that there wasn't really a particular story involved. It was an hour and a half of just a clown going around and killing people.
Right, yes.
And, you know, as much as I enjoy the practical effects and the kind of callback to old 80s slasher movies, there really wasn't much more than that, okay?
Which I think is okay, because sometimes no story is a story in itself.
That's fine. But if you're going to have a sequel, I mean, so if that was the only Terrifier movie they ever made, I'd be fine with that. Because that's obviously, it was basically an exercise in utilizing practical effects at a very low budget and
yeah.
And basically having Art the Clown go around being very terrifying as a mime.
Right.
So that, I get that, right?
Right.
So I totally get that. But I think when you're going to go with another movie, then you really do need a story. You can't have more of the same.
Right, you can't hash the same thing over again, which is why I was saying, even though the first movie, as you said, had no story and the critics said the same thing, I say it doesn't need it because you're being introduced to this character and you don't always need a background at that time.
But we already got introduced to the character in All Hallows Eve. I mean, we already had like the 15-minute intro that he's a killer clown that kills people in horrific ways. And apparently can't die. So, I mean, we kind of got that already. And I didn't think we really, but anyway, I get it though. Cause Terrifier really kind of expounded on the idea. It's almost like All Hallows Eve was a script treatment for Terrifier.
Yeah.
And Terrifier is kind of built
out. That's how I felt too. I mean, because I don't think All Hallows Eve was seen by a lot of people. Terrifier, I think, was probably seen by more people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after the introduction of Terrifier 2, they were able to develop into something a little bit more.
Okay, so let me talk about something. So let me roll into something else. Because we say Victoria Hayes was obviously the survivor from Terrifier. Her character had almost zero background.
Yes,
right?
Hers has no background.
The main character...
We know a little bit about her because she was a college student.
Right. But and she went to go pick up her...
And she was super annoyed because she had to pick up her sister.
Right, but that's it. Like, we barely knew anything about her. I mean, Sienna Shaw, the final girl in this particular movie, and her brother, Jonathan, had a lot more backstory, I think. I mean, obviously, they built up the fact that her father recently passed away from a brain tumor and had this mysterious sketchbook, which had a number of drawings in it, many of which were of Art the Clown and his victims, and then this mysterious angel warrior armor that she decides to make for Halloween.
But see, that's the thing. This is 1 year after. So we could kind of deduce that maybe he saw Art the Clown previously.
So maybe he was in the periphery somewhere or
right,
somehow related to Art the Clown. You know,
exactly.
We don't know what exactly happened.
Right, we don't know the relationship of why he has drawings of Art the Clown.
And we don't know much about her dad, except for the fact that it apparently was a brain tumor and he started seeing things late in the process and that led to the sketchbook. So why was he drawing Art the Clown and his victims? We don't know. And why was he drawing this Angel Warrior costume and the sword? Well, we get a little bit of insight into that at the end of the movie. But that being said, it does allow for a bigger universe to be built out around Art the Clown. And Sienna Shaw, I thought, did a fantastic – I mean, I think that – not Sienna Shaw. I think that that Sienna Shaw's character was quite good. And Lauren Levera, who actually has – this is her first film, did a fantastic job playing out that character because it was on one side, the typical 80s final girl, but on the other side, a much stronger character in many ways.
Right, because like usually when in the 80s, you saw a lot of the female roles
right.
Falling, screaming, not fighting back.
Yes,
and
a lot of tripping.
Right, a lot,
a lot of tripping.
Which exists in Terrifier 2 as well.
Yeah, you can't have a slasher movie about people tripping.
Right. But at the same time, you've made these characters a little stronger by them fighting back,
right.
which is something that a lot of them did not do.
And adding the aspect of her trying to protect her little brother and the little brother having this fixation on Art the Clown, I mean, it does kind of build a lot more. And there's some periphery characters around this as well. She has a friend, best friend, and of course, and the best friend. A couple of best friends. So, I mean, there's a lot of other things going on here as well. So I think that really did help in many ways develop the story. Now, 2 hours and 18 minutes.
Very long.
That's very long.
It was very long.
I don't think you will find anywhere a slasher movie in the 80s that lasted over 2 hours.
No. And in all honesty, I felt like they really could have trimmed it.
I do not disagree with that. I think that there was a lot of places they could have made it faster.
Yeah.
One of which was this freaking dream sequence, which, I don't think I'm spoiling anything here, but Robert Rodriguez once said that if you make a movie and it's too short, then add a dream sequence mm-hmm. because it doesn't in any way impact the movie. It doesn't change the movie timeline at all. It doesn't impact any of the characters at all because it was a dream. You can do whatever you want.
Right.
You just fill up 10 minutes of nonsense and it doesn't even have to make sense because it's a dream. I kind of feel like that's what happened here because I understand why they did the dream sequence because they wanted to have it move into reality, you know, the burning of her wings after she wakes up.
Right.
But they didn't need to have, I mean, that dream sequence must have lasted 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was long.
It was, yeah.
It didn't make any sense.
And also the party, the Halloween party was, I thought, too long.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
What was the point of that? There was no reason to drag that out. I mean, right there, we would have trimmed this to 2 hours. just by cutting those two things out. And it doesn't even have anything to do with the plot.
Yeah.
So I really do think that they went a little bit too long. They needed a little self-editing here. And I know why people love dream sequences. You can be ultra creative there and mm-hmm. there's no danger because none of your characters are ever impacted by it. Although I thought it was interesting that they allowed Art the Clown to visit dreams. That kind of reminded me a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes, that's what I thought too. I mean, I feel like now with Terrifier 2, they are pulling in a lot of parts from the 80s horror movies.
Right.
Like, that's what they're
more
doing
more so
now.
Than just playing hero slashers.
Right.
But now going into almost the, like I said, the Nightmare on Elm Street mythos. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, when you have the ability to do more than just be a psycho over and
right.
around killing people.
And you're unkillable.
Yeah. Yeah. Unkillable.
That was the whole idea of all these 80s, like, horror characters was they were all killable
unless you didn't believe in him, remember, because
yeah.
Freddy Krueger,
that's what she said, but then he came back.
Yeah.
So
that's because they knew they could make more money with another movie. That's why. It had nothing to do, they're like, if there's more money to be made or if people believe in me, I will be back. That's basically the Nightmare on Elm Street Freddy Krueger thing. All right, let's go to what did you like most and what did you like least about the movie.
So what I liked most about the movie was the special effects in this one.
The practical effects.
I think that we talked about like how much work they put into some of the effects.
Yes.
With the scenes, the mutilation scenes
right.
of the victims,
right.
how much work they had to do. So they didn't really use CGI, but they used like mannequins and robotics and
yes.
people controlling them with sticks.
Right, right. And then people, yeah, it was quite a lot of effort. When you read into what they went through in order to do
right.
it and without CGI, and I think they did only use CGI when they needed to. There is a particular scene that is infamous now because it's where are presumably, at least according to what people are saying, people fainted, they threw up, they walked out of the theater during the pre-screening of the scene where a particular character is mutilated by Art the Clown. So that required them to use a full animatronic body as well as five different people hidden behind the bed, the bedroom walls, all this other stuff, and all sorts of other things. And they even used like a balloon in the chest cavity to make it look like they're breathing hard. I mean, they did a lot of stuff.
Yes.
With physical stuff.
And I gotta really respect them going that route.
Right.
And I think and I said it like you could tell, like, even though they're quick glimpses, you know that they're wax figures or you know that they're not the actual person. And I always say, like, one of my pet peeves is when you're going through that much torture, you can't stay awake.
Right, but that would be a really lame movie, though, if they all passed out.
Right, but you just can't stay awake. I mean, the pain in itself from the first blow would knock you unconscious.
Right.
And if it didn't knock you unconscious, just the shock of it,
but
you would
be out.
But
that's why this is fiction and not nonfiction, thankfully. Thankfully, this is not nonfiction. But that being said, I do think that they did use CGI in certain places.
Right, where they needed
appropriately.
To, yes.
Like in that scene, they actually did CGI the face of the actress onto the animatronic, so that she could have facial expressions,
right,
and that she could react to certain things, which made it more realistic.
Right.
Because that's something you can't do with animatronics.
Right.
At all.
But for most of it, they really stuck to, I think, the
old school,
way of
yes,
doing,
practical effects.
Yeah.
Old school
of,
practical
of
effects.
Doing these things. And I think I really appreciate that in this movie. And I think I said that, we said that last
And that's
week
something
too.
That Damien Leone is known for. So I think that's probably why he decided to continue to focus on that for this particular movie. Okay. When, what did you like least?
The length.
Yeah, runtime was way
too
long.
Yeah, it was just so long. And, you know, I rewatched it again, and, you know, I was thinking,
it's
like,
so long.
Thinking that, you know, maybe it's okay that it's that long. And I was like, no, it's not okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
long.
The more you, the funny thing is, the more you watch it, you notice how long it is and
right.
how much time it occupies.
Because you now know that that dream sequence has no impact on the rest of the movie other than the fire. So now you're watching this saying, why are we looking at this? Why are we doing this?
Right, but also you're like, but you catch things where in the beginning, like you said, like you don't know what's coming up, but now you're like, oh, well, why is this even in here?
But some, yeah, so I'm saying, you know, but that, it's, but it's so how little impact the scene has, and it has no place being in the movie. It doesn't lead anywhere.
Right.
Again,
I mean, I was rewatching it. I feel like this movie could have been under like 2 hours.
Well, easily
under two hours.
I think under an hour and 45 minutes would have been better.
You know, I was thinking like, I was thinking that it would hit an hour 45. I don't know if it would be under an hour, but it would hit an hour 45.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this is the cardinal sin. This is worse than what Robert Rodriguez would do. if you've ever seen El Mariachi, where he had a long sequence where the guy's basically kicking his head around for no good reason for like 10 minutes because he had to kill more time to make it fit the runtime. That's exactly what I felt like was going on here.
But I felt like they didn't need a runtime. Why did they need an over 2 hour runtime?
They didn't. They didn't. I think this was self-editing. They did not do a good job of editing. So again, Dominic Leone, a great job with the practical effects. A little bit more self-editing, please. what I like most about it, of course, again, is David Howard Thornton as Art the Clown. He is magnificent as the mime psychopath clown, having a good time. And of course, the mysterious pale little girl, who I'd like to know more about. We know it.
No, she was one of his victims.
Well, I mean, but it would be nice to know a little bit more about why she took that place as being the pale little girl.
Well, this is what's interesting, because we talked about this and we said that we actually thought that she was a creation of Art the Clown.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
She wasn't actually really there. That was his creation.
But then she physically does stuff in the movie.
Does she?
Yeah, I mean,
no,
at the
I'm
end.
Thinking maybe she doesn't.
So you're saying everybody's seeing her do this stuff, but
I don't know. We just don't know. Well, I mean, we're living, this movie is now like out of the bounds of reality.
I'm just saying that I would like to know more about the little pale girl, but I think that she was, I thought she does a great character.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
Added a little bit more. Again, another example of how they're building out Art the Clown.
Yeah.
Like, there's more to him than just a killer psycho clown. And again, what
but
I like.
I always thought there was more to him.
Well,
than
we all did,
but
we never knew what it was. And now we get a little bit of that. And I think that's great. And what I like least, of course, is, like you, the runtime. Way too extended. Should be much shorter. Give us your scare meter from 0 to 10. 0 being it's My Little Pony. 10 being I poop my pants.
I gave this one a 7.
Oh, so did I. What do you know?
The funny thing is that, you know, when I first saw Terrifier, I was like, it's a great character. Like, the murder scenes were really good. You know, I liked all that stuff, right? And so I gave it an 8. When you watch the next version of it, it's a lot of the same.
Well, I think that the length
he
made
loves,
it look scary.
He loves popping out those eyeballs.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, he does a lot. But that's where practical effects come into play,
right?
An eyeball
exactly.
is
popping
physical.
Out an eyeball, yes. It's very, and like caving in chest.
Yeah. Again, more
knife
practical
work
effects.
On flesh, also very, like the makeup work, excellent.
Right.
And all that stuff. But yeah, there's only so many ways you could do it. And still, like, if you see it, it is scary. Like, it's
scary.
A lot of body horror. It's a lot of things that could happen.
Well, I would say gore. Let's
go
with body horror.
I guess gore outside of body horror. But I say body horror because they're demolishing bodies.
Yeah, but I always think of body horror as, like, David Cronenberg. You
know,
like, morphing weird bodies.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
You know, like, I feel like this is more, like, gory.
It is, yeah. That's a lot of gore. And I think for that reason, it is like on the, I think if you were to watch it, is on the scarier side of things.
Yep, I agree.
But like it's.
Well, I again, the seven for both of us. Okay, stars 0 to 4, 4 being the best, 0 being the worst. What do you give it?
You know, I gave it a 3.
No, me too. What do you know? We're thinking in sync today.
And like they said, the original one, I gave it a 3.5 because of the character, because it's new.
Yeah.
It has been such a long time since they've created a new character that I think will survive 20 years, 30 years. Like, I think Arthur Clown is in it for the long haul.
Well, he certainly has a developed character now that is part of the lore.
But, you know, as you see it and, you know, as you keep going through it, you know, great job, just so long. I had to, you know, just bring it down a notch, especially after seeing it the second time. And I'm just like, it didn't need to be this long.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. So I also gave it a 3. And I think it's because I thought it was a better story than the original and a bigger reveal behind Arthur Clown's origins and, you know, all the practical effects. Still very, very,
done. I mean, like the makeup work, the practical, like everything. Great job. The acting, Arthur Clown, great job. The others, it's what you would expect in a 80s slasher movie.
Yeah, but that being said, Lauren Lavera, again, a great first opportunity to be on the screen.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was well done. Okay, so what do the critics say? Critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes, 86%, everybody, pretty high. And the critics' consensus is Terrifier 2 outdoes the original in every way, which makes it bad news for the squeamish, but a bloody good time for genre enthusiasts. What do audiences say? Well, they gave it an 80%, and they say hardcore slasher fans may wonder why Terrifier 2's gore was so heavily hyped, but they'll also enjoy the old-school horror in Art the Clown's second act. So go check it out, Art the Clown in Terrifier 2. It's available on Amazon Prime. According to this, it's also available on Peacock. Who knew? All right, so everybody go check it out. That'll be fun. And for now, let's hit the boxing bill on that. Okay, so very briefly, we should talk about our picks last week because of the fact that we did have our picks last week, and we're both 1-1 last week.
1-1, yeah. That was disappointing.
Yeah, and I think that I missed on Derrick Henry. I thought that he was going to have a much better day, but he had a horrible, horrible day, and I don't really know who is to blame for that aside from the fact that I just made a very, very bad call. As for you, I think you missed on one of them as well. And I actually don't remember which one it was because you had two quarterbacks, right? I think
yes,
it was Bryce Young
No, it was Baker Mayfield.
No, Will
Levis.
It was Will Levis,
Levis,
right.
Yeah.
So the Will Levis over 2-21.
So Tennessee like kind of destroyed us both.
Yes, Tennessee took us down for sure. So Will Levis did not make the over on 221.5 passing yards. Derrick Henry did not make the over on 64.5 rushing yards. He was way under, actually. But Baker Mayfield did hit his 242.5 total passing yards. So congratulations to Baker Mayfield. And I had Mac Jones under 221.5, and I hit that as well. In fact, Mac Jones got replaced. He was so bad. So we may not see Mac Jones again. We may not be able to make another one. So let's move on to this week and talk about our dares, our prop bet dares that we dare to make. So week 11, what do you got as your pick?
My first pick is I'm going to do two quarterbacks again this week.
Okay.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
Indeed.
So I'm going to go this time with C.J. Stroud.
Okay.
And he is slated for 267.5, and I'm going to go with the under.
Wow, that's
I
bold.
Know.
That's
it
bold.
Is bold.
Stroud is still hot right now.
I know. C.J. Stroud is coming off of two really big games in the last 2 weeks against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Cincinnati Bengals,
right,
both of which were he had very south of 267.5.
Right.
But both teams are sitting on the bottom of the pass defense in the NFL.
Uh-huh.
So, which is surprising that Cincinnati has the 8th worst defense in the league right now.
Yeah.
And the Buccaneers have the 2nd worst. So they're pretty down there.
They are.
So CJ Stroud is playing the Arizona Cardinals this week, in week 11, and they're coming off a very narrow win against the Atlanta Falcons.
Only their 2nd of the year.
Yes.
But Kyler Murray's back though.
But
right?
Kyler Murray is back, yes. So, I mean, we all know, like, Houston is not a team that you could take for granted anymore.
No, they are for real.
Yeah, they are for real. And I don't know when that happened, but, like, they are suddenly, like, you know, very shockingly good.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, and just because I'm saying he's going to hit the under does not mean that they're going to lose.
Right, of course.
Right?
Right.
So with top defenses, and as top defenses, I'm meaning you know, the midway mark
so
and
like
above.
The, so 16 and above, maybe?
Yeah, 16
okay.
and above. Like, C.J. Stroud, like, and the Texans just don't, they just don't do that well with them.
Okay.
So they when they played against Atlanta, they lost.
Okay.
And they were ranked 10th.
Okay.
The Arizona Cardinals, currently they're ranked 11th in the pass defense.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm thinking that's like south of 16.
Yeah.
So I think that Stroud, you know, he's not going to go over the estimate. Even though he might come close, I don't think he's going to pass it.
Okay.
So he had, Stroud had 249 passing yards against Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
Strangely enough, Kyler Murray also had 249 yards against
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Weird.
And Arizona's defense only allowed 70 passing yards combined against Arizona. No, Arizona only allowed 70 passing yards for Atlanta's quarterbacks.
For Tyler Heinicke?
For both of them.
And Desmond Ridder.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like, I was shocked to see that too, but like combined, like they only got 70. So yes, we know C.J. Stroud better than these two quarterbacks. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Or
we're thinking he's
better.
He is by far.
Right. So I'm thinking, like, you know, he's gonna do better than 70, but not better than 267. And also, Arizona has the fifth worst run defense.
Right. So that's what I was thinking.
So because of that, I think Stroud and Houston will take advantage of that.
Devin Singletary had a record day last week, 150 yards.
Right. So because of that, like, why struggle in the pass game if you know that their run game is weak? But you have to throw it. You can't just run it. You have
right.
to throw it.
And C.J. Stroud, more of a pocket passing quarterback than a scrambling quarterback.
Right.
Really,
so, I mean, you're going to – I think that he's going to come close, but I don't think he's going to go over.
Okay. So you're going to have C.J. Stroud under 267.5 passing yards this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. My first pick is also in that game with the same team, the Houston Texans, but I have one for Nico Collins, the wide receiver from the Houston Texans. The bet this week, over under 56.5 rushing yards plus receiving yards. So that's total rushing yards plus receiving yards, over under 56.5. I will take the over on 56.5 rushing plus receiving yards. So the Texans, again, as we've just been talking about, they're starting to make believers out of everyone. I mean, they won their last three of their last four. They have the second most passing yards per game of any team this season at 274.3 per game. And rookie C.J. Stroud, who we've been talking about, is on a massive heater. You mentioned the last two games. He's averaged 413 passing yards per game over that span. That
yeah.
is a lot
it's
of
a lot,
yards
yeah.
to go around. Now, Nico Collins, he was out in week 10. He's now back without an injury designation. He's the clear-cut wide receiver one in that Houston offense. When he's playing, he's averaging 78.9 receiving yards per game, which, surprise, surprise, is more than 56.5.
Yeah.
Noah Brown, he hasn't practiced all week.
Yeah.
It's possible he plays. If he plays, he'll likely be limited. That leaves Collins and Tank Dell to pick up most of the receiving yards. We saw that. They can operate well together. They're both going to have plenty of yards, but that means more opportunity for Nico Collins. Now, interestingly, this prop is the same, whether it's receiving yards alone or both receiving plus rush yards. Now, Nico Collins has not run a single route this season.
Yeah.
But why not take the combo? You know,
yeah,
that
he might as well take the combo.
He might
yeah.
run a sweep for two
yeah.
yards, and already you're better off.
Yeah.
So take the combo.
I want to say that was a mistake.
I guess it's weird.
Like, it doesn't make much sense.
No, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But either way, I take the combo for 56.5. I think there's a lot of opportunity
yeah.
to go around there against the Cardinals. As we mentioned, they have Kyler Murray back now. He's likely to make this a much more competitive game, which means more opportunity for Collins to pile up yards. So that's what I have. Nico Collins there, lock it in at over 56.5 receiving and rush yards total. All right. Who's your second pick?
My second quarterback is Bryce Young
okay.
of
both
Carolina
rookies,
Panthers.
Number one and
yeah.
two. Okay.
And he has 190.5, and I'm going to go with the under.
So under 190.5 passing
yeah.
yards.
Under,
okay.
yeah. So Dallas, when we're talking about defense, the pass defense,
mm-hmm.
Dallas has the second best pass defense in the league right now.
Okay.
I can't talk about last week because, I mean, let's face it was a Giants.
Yes, they decimated the crap out of them.
And, you know, it was like their backup play. I mean, it was just
their backup. It was Tommy DeVito.
It was just a whole lot of messy. So you can't go by that. But even without the Giants, like, Dallas has done a good job holding back the quarterbacks from their opposing teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, whether they win or lose, right? Like, they do a good job holding him back. And now we're going to Bryce Young, who hasn't been that great this season. I mean, you know, he's
being very generous. He's had one good game against, now is against the Texans,
yeah,
and he's been pretty mediocre.
He's only won once, and I thought that was interesting that they won against the Texans.
I think he had something to prove, but
yeah,
then after that, I mean, it's pretty clear that Stroud is the real deal, and,
right,
and Bryce Young is the jury's still out on him.
And I just really don't know what's going on with Carolina, but yeah, Bryce Young, he just...
No targets.
Yeah, just hasn't been there this year. Bryce Young's biggest target is
Adam Thielen. Yeah, by a long shot.
You know, and if he doesn't connect with Adam Thielen, the game's just done.
Yeah,
like,
basically. He doesn't really have another receiver that he likes or has any connection with. Not like in Houston where he's connecting to Nico Collins, Tank Dell,
mm-hmm,
and Noah Brown.
Yeah.
And even Dalton Schultz.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's amazing.
But, like, yeah, so, I mean, the Bryce Young has had four games that's been over 190.5, so it's not like he can't reach it.
Okay.
But I just can't see them him putting up those numbers
against
Dallas. So, yeah, like, I mean, and even though they were above 190, it wasn't like 400 passing yards or 350 passing yards.
Not,
you know,
not like CJ
Stroud. Yeah, it was like 200, 270, 220.
Right.
I mean, so I'm just going to say, like, against the pass game, I don't think.
Well, they're gonna have
to
pass to keep up,
but
they don't really have a lot of options in terms of, like.
Well, that's
targets.
The thing. Like, you know, Dallas also has a weaker run game, but then, you know, who's gonna do the running?
Well, they shut down Tommy DeVito, who's obviously not Bryce Young, but still, it doesn't bode well for our friend Bryce Young. And so you're taking the under.
I'm gonna take two unders today.
Yep. All right,
yeah.
So the under for Bryce Young at 190.5 passing yards. So my second pick is the quarterback on the other side of the ball of that game.
I know, yeah.
Is Dak Prescott.
Yes.
And the prop bet I'm looking at is over under 12.5 rushing yards. So that's Dak Prescott over under 12.5 rushing yards. I will take the over on 12.5 rushing yards. So Dak Prescott, he has been el fuego over the last couple of weeks with wins over the Giants, Chargers, and Rams in a close game against the Eagles where they almost won. The good news for those looking to capitalize on Prescott's run is that regardless of the score, the Cowboys always keep their feet on the gas.
Yeah.
They do not lay off in any stretch of the imagination. Even in week 10, that's the game that we're just talking about, there's no arguing with that. They're obviously jerks. But in week 10, when the hapless Giants were being absolutely destroyed by them and ultimately losing by a score of 49-17, the Cowboys kept on pushing the ball down the field and scoring all through the game to the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Prescott totaled over 420 total yards and 5 touchdowns.
I think they were really disappointed because they wanted to go for the 50 burger and couldn't.
Yeah, they were a little bit short of that. So even though they faced the lowly one-win Panthers in week 11, I don't see the Cowboys letting up. I think they're going to score at will, and they will continue to score, and he will push it and push it and push it. Prescott has averaged 15 rush yards per game this season. Recently, the number of games that the three of the last four that I talked about, you know, the fact of the matter is that he has exceeded 12.5 rush yards in each of those games. He's actually exceeded it in the game against Eagles, too. So all four of his last games, he's exceeded 12.5 rush yards. And coincidentally, that's when he's looked better. He's looked better when he rushes, when he uses his legs. And I think he will continue to do that because I know that's a winning formula. The Panthers allow the seventh most rush yards per game, 131.9 of any team in the NFL this season. And there's a good chance at least 10% of that is going to come from Prescott. He's definitely going to do it again, I think. So I like the over for Prescott on 12.5 rush yards. And there we have it, guys. That is the end of the show. Let's hit the air horn in the show. And that's all the time we have. And, of course, I will tell everybody that we are brought to you by Manscaped. Get 20% off of free shipping with promo code GARBAGETIME at manscaped.com. And we're also brought to you by BetUS. Receive 125% sportsbook bonus upon initial deposit. Use the link in our podcast description to get this special offer. Okay, Joanne, give us your social media so people can follow you.
It's at Kung Fu for You, formerly Twitter, now X.
Yes, formerly Twitter, now X. Don't sue us, Elon. And you can find me at FB Garbage Time on X. formerly Twitter, or you can find me at the Football Garbage Time page on Facebook. As usual, thank you for listening and wasting time with us. We'll be back next time with more horror movie reviews and prop bets. Until then, watch those horror movie scares, make those NFL prop bet dares, and enjoy your NFL week.
Good luck, everyone.